So those who know me know this story. This is it's a funnier type of story. I spoke for an organization once, and I wasn't expecting a gift, because normally this organization is just sort of, I guess you could say, piecemeal, but they ended up getting me like this huge box that came in the mail. So it was like a crate, and it came in the mail, you know, through some type of either FedEx or whatever it was. So honestly, I thought that they had like trapped a monkey for me and like kept it inside there, and because, you know, they knew I loved animals, and they figured like, oh, we'll get him something like that. But it turned out to be much weirder than a monkey. I open it up, right, and there's all these like things around, and like these soft, like, you know, those almost those tiny little pillows, you know what I'm talking about? Like the packing pillows, right, that are one or the other. And inside were eight pairs, just eight pairs. There's four on top, four on the bottom. They're wrapped up entirely, and they were like bigger, but they were just pairs. So I thought that there was either a hidden camera in there, or that this is a massive drug deal that had gone bad, and somehow I had gotten them, and I could not understand anything. I swore off ever speaking for this organization ever again. I was like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever gotten. So my wife, who's a little bit more of a calm rationalist than I am, unless there's a kid in the house under the age of one, so she took a look at me and said, why don't you just try one? And I said, all right, fine, I'll take one. It's a pair, right? It's not that big of a deal. So I sat down as a pure skeptic, and I was a changed man. It was the greatest pair I have ever had before in my life. When I say the greatest pair I've ever had in my life, I mean nothing even compares to this thing. It was like candy melting in my, it felt like an M&M, like melting in my mouth. Like, you took one bite, and you were just like, it was the perfect combination between cold and hot. Like, I can't even explain it. It was the softest, best-tasting fruit that I've ever had in my life. I've never had anything like it. It was so good, I immediately polished off five of them before I realized I should probably give my kids a chance to taste Me'ein Olam Haba. Right? I didn't think against that. I decided maybe I should give them a little bit over there. And now I have a real problem. I can't eat a pear anymore. It's impossible. Every time I have a pear, all I do is I compare it to what I had that one time, and it tastes like sawdust. They taste absolutely garbage. No clue. No idea. I knew they came from South America. It said South America, and it had like a whole thing. And I was like, oh, I'm for sure going to remember this forever. And of course, I forgot like an hour later where they were from, and I threw out the packaging, and it's completely gone. But it was, like, you can't even compare. It was nothing, absolutely nothing there. So there's a Maimar Chazal that hit me at that time. And it's a Maimar Chazal that's in Sotim Memches, and I finally understood it, where it says, Mishacharav Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Nitol Tam Beperos. All the taste of fruit was taken away from us. And then the Gemara says, Afilu Shuman Shebeperos. Even the fattiness that's in every fruit, everything had been taken away. And I finally understood it. Can fruits really taste that much better than what we have right now? And the answer is 1,000% yes. If you would have had this fruit, you would have told me, there's no. If this is what the Beis HaMikdash fruit would have been like, meaning when the Beis HaMikdash is around, if the fruit would have grown like this, you would want the Beis HaMikdash just for that fruit. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But now we have to understand something. There is no Beis HaMikdash. And even this fruit that I had is nothing like what the taste would have been had the Beis HaMikdash been around. Can the Beis HaMikdash really bring back the taste of fruits? The answer is simple. It's a simple thing to understand. Our davening is stale. It feels stagnant. It feels like we get to daven, but we're not sure if somebody's listening. We don't feel all the time that we had a great tefillah. We had an okay tefillah. We put something together. But it didn't feel, doesn't always feel that it goes straight up. The Beis HaMikdash being around allowed your tefillos to go straight to Shemayim. You felt something different about it. Even the second Beis HaMikdash was not on the same level. But nonetheless, you felt like something just happened. I don't know, because obviously I was not there. I don't know if it's a click inside your head. I don't know if it's just a feeling, a euphoria that fills your body, Or I, maybe it's something completely different. Maybe there's a completely different idea over here, but you felt like you were being answered. You were seeing constant miracles. You were staring at multiple miracles right in front of your face. You saw the pillar of smoke ascending from the Mizbeach, going straight to Shemayim, that no matter what the wind was like, that pillar of smoke was going straight up. You smelled only Gan Eden, even though there was tons of rotting and burning meat everywhere. You didn't see any flies anywhere whatsoever, no flies or anything like that. There was always room. Wherever you were, there was always room. It felt like you had room wherever you were in the Beis HaMikdash. You knew the Aron Kodesh was there and took up no room whatsoever in the first Beis HaMikdash at least. You knew that there was stuff, there were areas on the side and it didn't take anything. You saw the scarlet thread turn to white during the times of the first Beis HaMikdash. Up until Shimon HaTzadik even, you could see that in the second Beis HaMikdash. You saw something like there when the Sira Mishtaleach, when the goat was thrown off the cliff on Yom Kippur. You knew this was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's house that Shlomo Melech had built L'Shem Shemayim, completely L'Shem Shemayim, and it was a different world. It was just a completely different world. And we have no idea. We literally have no idea. Our tefillos are lucky to make it into the Rekia before it gets grabbed by the Mekatrigim, by the accusers who come along and say, what do we deserve to have it? The Shadim, the Mazikin that are out there in the world no longer exist in our world as we see it. They exist up there in some way where everything we do, they grab, they take from us, and they throw it into their own thing. We just don't get it. Forget about davening without a minion. If you daven without a minion, what happens to your tefillah is a totally different story altogether. We just don't have that power anymore. We don't have the power to daven on our own. To daven with a minion, at least the schus of having nine other people with us, maybe there's someone there whose schus can allow the tefillahs to go through and that protects everyone else's tefillahs. Maybe the 10 of them together can band together to knock off anything that tries to take them away. But by ourselves, especially if it's not during the zman of tefillah, I would never tell somebody it's not worth it to daven. But sometimes that is the truth. It's almost like, what are you doing? At least you know you did something wrong when you don't daven. If you did daven a little bit later in such a bad way, like, what's the point? And there's something missing there. So Avigdor Miller's sixth step is the following. Take up to 30 seconds a day. And during that time, you could even sit on the floor and think about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Think about how the fact that the Beis HaMikdash is no longer around. What are we missing? Why do we need a building there instead of the Dome of the Rock? What do we have? Why is the Kosel not good enough? Why is that just not good enough? Why do you even have to tear Kriya when you go into Yerushalayim now? Because Yerushalayim is a destroyed city. Yerushalayim is an awesome city. There's great stuff there. Tons and tons of Jews. Unbelievable amounts of Torah being learned. Possibly the biggest yeshiva in the world. I don't know. It was between that and Lakewood, I guess. Right? The biggest yeshiva in the world. So that's what we're tearing Kriya for? We're tearing Kriya when we go to the old city? Because we're so sad that what? The old houses that are garbage, that are on the side? You can see the Arab houses. You want to live there? Does anybody want to go there? I mean, yeah, hello, yes, we do. Right? But that's what we're missing? And the answer is yes, because we don't get it. We just don't get it. Let's go through that. Have you ever tried explaining something to someone that has absolutely no shaychus to what you're trying to explain to them? You ever tried doing that? For example, I happen to love baseball. I love watching it, I love playing it, I love coaching it, I love being involved in every aspect of baseball. I've always loved baseball. Since I was a little kid, 3-4 years old, since my dad took me to all the games when I was a little kid, I have always loved baseball. And the truth is, I love thinking about the different things you can do with that. I watched tons of games as a kid, and even though I haven't seen a game in a very long time, I played tons of games as a kid. I still miss it a lot. And even though you can play softball now, that was my biggest annoyance in the world, I love baseball. I just happen to love baseball itself. So of course, when I first got married, I tried explaining to my wife, right, what was so great about the game, and I failed miserably. Failed completely. Because all she sees is a boring game where the fielders are picking their noses, waiting for something to be hit to them, while a pitcher waits 20 minutes, you know, shaking off signs one after the other, waiting for the catcher to throw a one or a two down there, and all of a sudden he pitches it, and then ball one. And then 20 seconds later, ball two. 30 seconds later, foul. And that, to her, it's just like, it's grating. It's grating on her nerves. She can't stand it whatsoever. While I see what's now called cybermetrics, which we always knew is just plain strategy of just like, what are you trying to do? You pitch in order to set up the next pitch. You know what's in your arsenal. You know what you have within the first 40 pitches of the game, the next 40 pitches of the game, and the next 40 pitches of the game. You know what your arm can do and what your arm can't do. You also know what this hitter really likes to do and what he doesn't like to do. So you know what kind of pitch he likes. You wouldn't throw a slider on a first pitch unless you were positive that you could get the sink to go straight down, because if you don't, that's a hanging slider. The guy's going to hit that a mile. Just got to be careful with what you do in every single case. Now, I'm looking at it, and I'm watching the game, and all I'm thinking of is this guy is a left-handed pitcher with a right-handed hitter with no men on base, one out. What should you pitch to this guy? How should you pitch him? Knowing what the pitcher has, knowing what the batter has. To me, that's an entire game in my head, and every pitch means something. I can think of something by every pitch. And what if it goes 2-1? What if it goes 2-0? What happens? Do I want him to foul it off a bunch? Or do I want it to, do you just want to make contact? Or do you want to finally get something? These are real, like in my mind, that's how you do it. And I'm watching these games or listening to these games now and hearing it and get everything there. But there's no way I can't explain to somebody what that's like. Anybody else who hears it is just going to be like, I guess. It just doesn't mean anything to me. And I totally hear them. Unless you're really into it, it doesn't mean anything to you. Every day I'm treated to an invitation to join the greatest game of all time by someone who might be here right now called Fortnite. I cannot for the life of me understand why it's so much fun. But there are people that swear by it. And when they try to explain it to me, I have no shaychus. I don't want anything to do with it. Someone who's been into it for a while looks at me in shock. How could you not be into this? Millions of people are into this. How in the world can't you? But I'm not. I'm just not. I have no desire whatsoever. Lahavdil, you know, the usual Alfei Aleph Havdalos. But Lahavdil, that's what it's like with the Beis Hamikdash. I have no idea what I'm missing. I can't tell you what I'm missing because it's a world that we have no shaychus to. What kind of world is it where you have constant presence with a capital P, where the Shekhinah is with you at all times, where you can daven and feel good about what you're davening about, where you can cry and feel like someone is actually listening to the crying itself? Yes, we have that in a way right now. But we have no shaychus to what it's like to have a Beis Hamikdash right there in front of us. No shaychus to this. How many neshamos have we lost over the years in Klal Yisrael, because there are so many people who don't get this, who don't understand this, and have no shaychus. There would be no Reform Judaism. There was no Reform Judaism by the Beis Hamikdash. Even the Tzedukim, who lived by then, still wanted to do the Avodah. They still wanted to do the Avodah in the Beis Hamikdash. They still wanted something. Even the, whatever you want to call them, the Hellenistic Jews, had some shaychus. They just wanted their own avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. They wanted something a little bit different. But they all had shaychus to it. And maybe even then, that's only the second Beis Hamikdash, which didn't have that much power. But the first Beis Hamikdash, a world of nevuah, where Ruach HaKodesh was rampant, where the people all around, we can't imagine it. We have no idea. We hear stories, we hear ideas, but we literally have no shaychus. We read a Gemara in Sanhedrin on Kuf Hei, where Ravashi says to Menashe the king, and says, when Menashe came to him in a dream, because Ravashi was making fun of him, he said, we'll darshan about our friends tomorrow. So Menashe comes to Ravashi in a dream and says, I'm not your friend. You don't even know where to cut the challah for Bitzias Apas. When you'd make a motzi, you have no idea. Hech lemishri, lemishri apas. And Ravashi said, where is it? He said, Mehechem to cut in Bishula. And he said to him, so what's pshat? If you're so great, if you know all these halachos, how in the world could he run after Avodah Zarah? To the point where Menashe tells him, if you were there, you would have lifted up your robe and run after it. You would have run after it like it's the only thing in the world. We have no shaychus to this Avodah Zarah, because if we would have been around that Avodah Zarah, we would have fallen like crazy. We have no nevuah, we have no real Ruach HaKodesh, we don't have the same abilities of Tuma that they had back then. We got nothing. We don't even know what we're missing. You have no idea. So yeah, young man came up to me years ago and he asked me, he said, he wanted to prove that there was a neshama in our bodies. So he said, prove to me, just show me like one thing that's spiritual, so that I can understand that there's such a thing, you know, that spirituality exists. I said, I can't do that, but I'll tell you what, Rabbi Raka exists in Chicago. I'll go to Rabbi Raka, I'll ask him, you know, what he can do. So I asked Rabbi Raka, I'm like, can you do some kisha for something? You know, just to make sure that this guy... So I said, is there anything, what would you say? And he told me, he said, send the guy to a tahara sames, when they're doing a tahara for a dead person. See what the body is like when there's a neshama in the body. See what the body is like when there's no neshama in the body. See what happens when life is gone. He says that proves to a person that there's something there. There's something that's missing. As soon as the neshama leaves the body, whatever happens after death, the body immediately reverts back to the dust. Immediately. And if you put it in the right position, in the right sun, with the right heat, etc., it could happen in days. Days. The body can melt it down. Maybe not the bones. The bones will just be bleached and whitened, and that's that. The bones won't revert all the way back. But the skin, the flesh, is gone in seconds. Seconds. We have to put them in a morgue, in freezers, to keep the body around. Because the neshama holds it together. It's the craziest thing in the world. Now, I told it to that guy. The guy did not do a tahara. He was convinced, though. He said he finds dead bodies ichi. I think that was an exact quote. So he decided he wasn't going to do such a thing. But the concept, we have an area called the Kosel. We might have, let's call it, the body of the Beis HaMikdash, which is Temple Mount itself. We're missing the neshama. We're missing the neshama. We have a Dome of the Rock there, and we're missing the neshama behind it. And literally, it's just sitting there rotting in the hands of the other nations. And we can't see anything. We just see it, a beautiful building that has some gold-plated, you know, like what we have over here, dome, that's sitting up on top of there, and we're missing everything else. We're missing the neshama. It's like there's nothing there. The difference between those two, our dead bodies, ourselves, our own dead bodies can bring about our own Tchiyas HaMesim itself. There's an ability for us to bring back the Beis HaMikdash, and it starts with at least thinking about what we're missing. And really what this 15 to 30 seconds is not just thinking about the Beis HaMikdash, it's thinking about what you're missing in this world. It's really thinking about like what I wish, whether it's for Refuah Shleima, whether it's for, you know, a Shidduch, whether it's for everything to go right, just things to go well, even if it's just a test. The line of missing the Beis HaMikdash means we don't have the ability to even ask for it anymore. We wish we had the ability to ask for it. We wish we had a place that we could just travel to on a plane in a couple hours, get there, see the miracles, and convince ourselves that even if we had to go back to Chutz La'aretz, we're convinced there is really a God out there. That's what we're missing. We're missing that ultimate area that makes us feel so much better, that makes us feel like there's something out there. And I really think that this is something that Rav Miller says, you don't have to sit on the ground. It doesn't have to be 30 seconds every day. Just 15 seconds of thinking about it. And your yod's designed for today, right? Because this counts. But to think about it tomorrow and the next day, and to spend time, maybe even stopping in the middle of your Shemona Esrei and taking a 15-second pause in the middle of V'li Rushalayim Ircha or Est Semach David Avdecha, or in one of those fields right there, and say to yourself, what am I missing here? What should I be concentrating on? That would be great. That way, you won't find yourself by modem automatically and say, hell, did I just say everything? Or am I just bowing? Because I should be on modem by now. Maybe you'll actually stop in the middle and be like, I don't know if I said anything up until then. Did I or didn't I? I have a suffix. It should be a little bit easier next time. Stop with that, everybody.